Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 29th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, County Approves Reinvestment Zone. Construction on Pioneer Wind Energy Farm anticipated to start spring 2023. By Ben Schaffer. Midland County Commissioners approved the establishment of a reinvestment zone in southeastern Midland County for Pioneer Natural Resources for its wind energy farm. The creation of the reinvestment zone is required before county leaders can approve a tax abatement agreement, according to County Attorney Russell Malm. Representatives of Pioneer have approached county leaders about its wind energy farm, Pioneer Hut Project, and the possibility of tax abatements. The wind farm would consist of about 51 General Electric turbines. The anticipated start of construction would be spring 2023, with construction finalized in December of next year. In September, Midland ISD approved a 313 tax abatement agreement for the wind farm. A Pioneer executive previously told the Reporter Telegram that the project would mean between $11 and $12 million in new tax revenue over the next 15 years when the project goes online. In order to designate a property as a reinvestment zone, the court has to find doing so will contribute to the retention or expansion of primary employment, that it would attract major investment in the zone, that it would be a benefit to the property to be included in the zone, and it would contribute to the economic development of the county, Malm said. Daniel Pender, Surface Land and Business Development Director of Pioneer Natural Resources, said going forward with the wind project is a critical first step in reducing emissions. During the public hearing portion of the discussion, two Midlanders shared their concern about the tax abatement agreement. Rachel Walker urged that although the court moved forward with the reinvestment zone, county leaders should not move forward with the tax abatement agreement for Pioneer Hut. She said there were two main reasons why the county shouldn't partake in the agreement. The wind farm will provide no economic incentive to the county, and second, the wind farm doesn't provide any energy benefits to our residents, she said. Next Era is developing the facility, a 141-megawatt facility comprised of 47 3-megawatt turbines. They will be placed on surface acreage Pioneer owns on the Hut Ranch. Pioneer officials have previously said the company has substantial oil and gas infrastructure on the ranch, and that Pioneer has agreed to purchase power from the facility for use in its oil and gas operations. Targa Resources will also participate, using power from the facility for its processing plants. She added that in previous meetings regarding the wind farm, it was revealed that this project will create 2 to 4 permanent full-time jobs. A tax abatement agreement with these multi-billion-dollar companies that creates essentially 0 jobs and will almost certainly be built regardless of your decision is just bad business for Midland County, she said. Todd Sparks said that there are federal and state subsidies that already assist projects like Pioneer's wind farm. With the lack of job creation that's going to come with this for the county, I just don't see a reason why the county would participate in the project, he said. The court didn't vote on the tax abatement agreement, and it will be discussed at the next commissioner's court on December 12th. This article is entitled, Permian Basin Accounts for 68% of Texas Oil and Gas Severance Tax, by Stuart Doreen. No county and region accounted for more severance tax on oil and gas than Midland County and the Permian Basin, according to the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance. Midland County accounted for 11.44% of the $7.128 billion in severance tax collected. Midland was one of two counties accounting for 9% or more. Reeves was the other. The Permian Basin, as expected, dominated, accounting for more than two-thirds of the severance tax on oil and gas inside the entire state. 65% of severance taxes came from less than 20 counties in the central Permian Basin, Motran reported. Those severance taxes help fund education, roads, and many other areas of the state budget. In 2022, severance taxes accounted for a $3.6 billion deposit toward the State Highway Fund to help build and maintain roads and highways across the state of Texas. Last fiscal year, those funds provided an additional $3.6 billion for the State Highway Fund. That's as much as was generated from the state's portion of motor fuel taxes, according to James Beecham, executive director of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, in an email. It is difficult to express just how important the oil and gas industry is to our state's bottom line. The top five counties were Midland, $1.242 billion, Reeves, $977.3 million, Martin, $947.1 million, Loving, $764.6 million, and Howard, $633.3 million. Over the last few years, we have placed a lot of emphasis on reinvesting a small portion of those funds back into the areas that generate them, Beecham wrote. In the upcoming session, we hope to be able to do more by extending the County Road Grant Program for energy-impacted areas, provided over $18 million to Midland County during the last round of funding, as well as passage of the GROW bill authored by State Representative Tom Craddock, which would provide additional severance tax dollars back to our energy-producing areas. This article is entitled Establishing a National Leader. Under Daniel's leadership, college saw a 50% increase in enrollment, creation of its first baccalaureate degree. By Rebecca Bell, Midland College. Editor's note: 2022 marks the 50th anniversary of Midland College. This is the third in a series of four weekly articles about Midland College's history over the past 50 years. David Daniel served as Midland College president from 1991 to 2008. Under his leadership, the college saw a 50% increase in enrollment, a $41.8 million bond passed with 70% approval, and the creation of Midland College's first baccalaureate degree. David Daniel gave 17 years of service to Midland College and the Midland community. Current MC President Steve Thomas said, "He garnered tremendous community support for Midland College and established MC as a national leader among community colleges." Other accomplishments by Daniel include establishing the Midland College Advanced Technology Center, which provides state-of-the-art education and training in technical applications, health sciences entry-level professions, safety training, and workforce skills to high school students, college students, and employees of the Permian Basin businesses. Establishing the Cogdell Learning Center, serving South and East Midland. Developing the M.C. Williams Regional Technical Training Center in Fort Stockton, which later became the college's only branch campus. Creating the Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series and the Phyllis and Bob Cowan Performing Arts Series. Expanding the footprint of the Midland College main campus to include the Dorothy and Todd Aaron Medical Science Building, the Leona G. and John E. Fox Science Building, the F. Marie Hall Academic Building, 3 residence halls, a new maintenance facility, the Dolly Neal Chapel, and the college's first dining hall, the Jack E. Brown Dining Hall, which is now being renovated into the Jack E. Brown Conference Hall and will house the Petroleum Professional Development Center. I am proud of MC's place among other community colleges, the development of which has helped to keep this nation at the top of civilization as we know it, Daniel said before he retired from Midland College in August 2008. People often say to me, "We're so proud of our college." That sense of ownership means everything. In 2001, the Permian Basin chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals chose Daniel as the Fundraiser of the Year. And in 2005, the Boy Scouts of America Buffalo Trail Council awarded him their Distinguished Citizen Award. Daniel was also a state and national leader in community colleges. In 1991-92, Daniel was chair of the American Association of Community Colleges, AACC, the highest elected office among America's community colleges. He was a member of the AACC board from 1988 to 93, and in 2005, Daniel was chosen by the AACC trustees as the outstanding chief executive officer for the Western region. Daniel was named a transformational leader in community colleges and was selected by the U.S. Department of Education for a Fulbright Award to China. His service to Texas higher education includes serving as president of the Texas Association of Community Colleges and as a member of the Texas Council of Workforce and Economic Competitiveness. In 2012, Midland College named the Men's Residence Hall as the Daniel Residence Hall in honor of Daniel and to commemorate his dedication and 17-year leadership of Midland College. Daniel passed away in July 2020. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement for Midland College. This article is entitled MPD, Midlander is Arrested After Firing Gun at Store, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 21-year-old was arrested after firing a gun at two others Saturday evening at the DK convenience store in the 5800 block of West Interstate 20, according to Midland Police. Midland Police reported that at approximately 8:30 p.m., officers were dispatched to a DK convenience store in reference to shots fired. While responding to the scene, officers were notified of a gunshot victim with non-life-threatening injuries at Midland Memorial Hospital. Identified as 21-year-old Luis Miguel Espinoza Galindo, MPD reported. During the investigation, it was discovered that Galindo fired his gun at two males, one of which returned fire in self-defense, striking Galindo. MPD added Galindo was released from MMH and later transported to Midland County Jail for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled City Seeks New Board Member for Midland Development Corporation, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The City of Midland is asking for applications from those interested in serving on the Midland Development Corporation Board. The City has reported Stephen Lowry has termed out, and he needs to be replaced on the Board of 7. Terms generally vary from 2 to 4 years, according to the City. The City Secretary's Office reported Jill Pennington and P. Lorsey Sams are up for reappointment. The MDC was created in January 2002 to promote business expansion, job creation, and capital investment to diversify and strengthen the Midland economy, according to the MDC website. The MDC is funded by a quarter-cent increase in the city's sales tax. A complete list of boards, commissions, along with meeting schedules, is attached to the application form and can be found on the city's website. Applications are available at the City Secretary's Office, Room 330, City Hall, 685-7430. The application can also be downloaded from the city website at www.midlandtexas.gov. Select on City Leadership, then Government, then click on Boards and Commissions. The deadline for application is 5 p.m. on December 30th. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Pfluger: Bipartisan Bill Aims to Expedite LNG Export Licensing, by Mella McEwen. Providing U.S. energy to the nation's strategic partners and allies could become easier if bipartisan legislation eventually takes effect. Representative August Pfluger, Republican District 11, which includes much of the Permian Basin, and Representative Henry Cuellar, the Democrat from Laredo, have introduced the LNG for Allies Act, which would expedite licensing for exports of U.S. liquefied natural gas to U.S. allies and partners. Europe's current dependence on Russia and other adversaries for their energy should serve as a wake-up call to the world on the importance of a secure, reliable source of energy, Pfluger told the Reporter Telegram by email. These countries should be heating their homes and running their businesses with American-produced energy, which will in turn boost our economy and strengthen our position on the world stage. Pfluger added that he is proud Permian Basin producers are producing at record levels, and said the legislation will allow producers to export more made-in-America energy across the globe. Ensuring our allies rely on energy from the Permian Basin and not Russia, Iran, or China. The legislation, he noted, would ensure the federal government will not slow-walk approval for energy exports. In a statement, Cuellar commented, "Expediting LNG exports to our allies will bring numerous economic, geopolitical, environmental, and national security-related benefits. The United States has a rich supply of natural gas. Facilitating the exportation process will strengthen supply chains with our allies and bolster our economy here at home. I am pleased to join Representative Pfluger on this legislation, and I thank him for his leadership." Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email he was pleased to see Congressman Pfluger take the lead on such an important energy issue. "This legislation will show America's commitment to our allies, as well as to the hard-working men and women producing oil and gas right here in America," Shepard wrote. He continued, "We are also pleased to see that Congressman Cuellar has co-sponsored the legislation. America needs more common-sense, bipartisan solutions to help formulate a serious energy policy. The legislation would expedite the LNG export approval process for U.S. allies Australia, South Korea, Israel, Japan, and New Zealand, as well as strategic partners Cyprus, Finland, Moldova, Sweden, Taiwan, and Ukraine. It also specifies that applications for expedited LNG exports to any nation designated state sponsors of terrorism under the FY19 NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, the Arms Export Control Act, and Foreign Assistance Act of 1961 will be denied. Those listed as state sponsors currently include North Korea, Syria, Iran, and Cuba." This article is entitled oil rises as OPEC Plus considers cuts amid faltering market. By Julia Fanzarez, Bloomberg. Oil rose as OPEC Plus delegates said deeper production cuts could be an option when they meet this weekend. West Texas Intermediate rose 1.3% to settle above $77 a barrel. Earlier in the session, oil prices slumped below $74 to the lowest since December, as protests over harsh anti-COVID measures erupted across China, triggering a broad sell-off in commodities and equity markets. With the oil market structure looking increasingly weak, delegates from the group say additional reductions could be an option. The nearest portion of the Brent and WTI futures curve flipped into contango, a bearish structure indicating oversupply, with physical markets also under pressure. Speculators markedly reduced bullish bets, posting the sixth largest reduction in net long positions on record for Brent last week. Underscoring the market's shaky fundamentals, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company reduced its Brent crude forecast by $8 to $90, as it expects Russian production to hit pre-war levels by mid-2023. OPEC Plus will meet Sunday to decide on its next output level, while European Union nations debate whether to set a price cap as low as $62 a barrel on exports of Russian crude oil. Several countries demanded a level that could put more pressure on Moscow, but the talks remain stuck, diplomats said. Over the weekend, the U.S. moved to grant supermajor Chevron Corporation a license to resume oil production in Venezuela after sanctions halted all drilling activities almost 3 years ago. The sanctions relief comes after Norwegian mediators announced the restart of political talks between President Nicolas Maduro and the opposition. Yet Chevron's CEO Mike Wirth said it might take years to begin to refurbish those oil fields, meaning additional output won't be immediate. This article is entitled "Gas Prices Fall to Lowest Level Since February" by Julia Fanzarez, Bloomberg. Gasoline prices in the U.S. have fallen to their lowest level since before Russia invaded Ukraine back in February. The average national pump price now stands at $3.546 a gallon, erasing all gains related to war disruptions, according to Auto Club AAA. The decline followed continued soft demand and growing supply. Prices have weakened as refineries have returned from maintenance, while the country's fuel consumption lags seasonal norms, according to the most recent U.S. Energy Information Administration data for the week ended November 18th. This article is entitled "U.S. to Auction Almost 1 Million Acres Off Alaskan Coast for Oil Drilling" by Ari Natter, Bloomberg. The Biden administration plans to offer hundreds of thousands of acres off the coast of Alaska for new oil and gas drilling next month, a sale mandated in Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act to win the support of holdout West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin. The auction of more than 956,000 acres in Alaska's Cook Inlet next month, announced by the Interior Department Monday, could produce nearly 200 million barrels of crude and 300 billion cubic feet of natural gas over the lifetime of the lease sales, according to department estimates, though it's debatable whether any drilling will actually occur. The lease sale, to be held December 30th, was one of several previously canceled offerings reinstated in the Democrats' climate spending bill signed into law in August, and considered a linchpin to win Manchin's support. The Biden administration announced it had canceled the Cook Inlet sale in May, citing a lack of interest, prior to the legislation's enactment. Still, news of the sale that includes federal waters stretching roughly from Calgon Island in the north to Augustine Island in the south drew outrage from environmental groups such as the Center for Biological Diversity. The nonprofit has said the activity would harm one of the world's most endangered whale populations, as well as other species. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, November 29th. Enid Davis. Enid Marie Weidenbach Davis, 95, of Midland, peacefully left this mortal coil to join her Savior and once more stand beside her dear husband on Tuesday, November 15th. She was born on July 30th, 1927, to Oscar Frederick and Pansy Modena Copeland Weidenbach in Merkel, Texas. Enid is preceded in death by her parents, Oscar and Pansy Weidenbach, her husband Cody Davis, and her brother Fred Weidenbach and nephew Wade. She is survived by daughters Cynthia Cindy Davis Belden of Ballinger and Cecile Davis Meir of Cincinnati, and their respective husbands Matt and John. Enid is also survived by her brothers Carl Weidenbach and wife Ruth of College Station, Paul Weidenbach and wife Anita of Keller. She was also survived by three grandchildren, as well as several nieces and nephews. A memorial service for Enid will be held on December 3rd at 3 p.m. at First Christian Church, Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made in Enid's name to First Christian Church or the charity of your choice. Guests may register online at www.ballingerfuneralhome.com. Joanne C. V. Parker. Joanne C. V. Parker, 76, of Big Spring, passed away on Thursday, November 25th. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, November 30th, at 11 a.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Rosewood Chapel. Interment will follow at Gale Cemetery, Gale, Texas. The family will receive friends from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, November 29th at the funeral home. Joanne was born September 2nd, 1946 in Waterloo, Iowa, to the late Johnny Walter Seavey and Mildred Southard Seavey. She moved to Big Spring, Texas as a young teen. She is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Janaw Cranin and Geert, her granddaughter and grandson-in-law, Alex Miles and Brad, her siblings Kay Wilson and husband David, Jackie Hendricks and husband Beau, Johnny Seavey and wife Dee, Jan Rios and husband Robbie, and Jimmy Seavey and wife Sherry, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the Methodist Children's Home in Waco, or to the Alzheimer's Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Joe Don Lilly. Joe Don Lilly, 58, passed away on Thanksgiving, November 24th. Family visitation was held Sunday, November 27th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services were held Monday, November 28th, at Kelview Heights Baptist Church in Midland. Joe was born on June 29, 1964, in Big Spring, Texas, to Alton Donnell Lilly and Janie Jeffcoat Lilly. Joe is survived by his wife, Susan Newcomer Lilly, his son, James Brandon, and wife, Sarah, and son, Timothy Martin Lilly, his father, Alton Donnell Lilly, and wife, Jerry, his brother, Jeffrey Lilly, his sister, Jana Turner, and husband, Randy, as well as nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his mother, Janie Carol Jeffcoat, as well as his grandparents. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Compassion International or St. Jude's. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home of Midland. Kenneth Lee Casseroler. Kenneth Lee Casseroler passed from his earthly home to arrive at his heavenly home on November 25th. Kenneth was born to Kenneth and Frida Casseroler in Beaumont, Texas, on December 16th, 1939. Kenneth is survived by his wife, Fela, his two children, Kenny Casserola, Susan, of Lumberton, Texas, and Sherry Casserola Roblier, Brian, of Katy, Texas. He also three stepchildren, Brett Smith, Allison, Tamara Smith Humphreys, and Sheldon Smith Laura. He was also blessed with 14 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. The service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 30th at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. You are invited to contribute to your favorite charity or Midland Christian School in lieu of flowers. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Norberto Ochoto Reyna. Norberto G. Ochoto Reyna, 84 years old, went to his heavenly home on November 24th. He was born in Big Spring, Texas, on March 28, 1938, to parents Gustavo and Elisa Ochoto Reyna. He is survived by his wife, Alicia Tarango, of 65 years, 6 children, Norberto Ochoto Reyna Jr., Carol Diaz, Rosemary Zarate, Joanne Williams, Sylvia Bernal, and Mary Alice Castillo. He is also survived by 12 grandchildren and many great-grandchildren. Surviving siblings include one brother, Gus Ochoto Reyna, and a sister, Ida Rodriguez. He is preceded in death by his parents, Elisa and Gustavo Ochoto Reyna, siblings Amelia Torres and Maria Elena Vasquez. Death Notices. Olodia Mancha Ramirez. Olodio Mancha Ramirez, 60, of Laredo, Texas, passed away Saturday, November 26th in Midland. Services are pending with Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Edmundo Lopez Villarreal. Edmundo Lopez Villarreal of Midland died on November 20th. Graveside services will be held on November 29th at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Forrest Riggs. A visitation for Forrest Riggs will be held Friday, December 2nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home in Midland. A celebration of life will occur Saturday, December 3rd from 1 to 2 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Riggs family. Wanda Hines. Wanda Hines, 85, of Midland, passed away November 25th. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, December 1st at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lazaro Salazar. Lazaro Salazar, 87, of Stanton, passed away on November 28th. Lazaro was born in Mexico on December 17th, 1934, to Jose and Maria de Jesus Salazar. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, November 29th, from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 30th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery. Survivors include his son, Abel Salazar, a sister, three brothers, and two grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Tommy Haney. Tommy Haney, 80, of Midland, passed away November 24th. Private family services are pending. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, November 29th. Energy industry to be tested in 23. Federal hostility, cautious investors, global underproduction pose big questions. An industry as big and powerful as energy may expect challenges almost as big and powerful as it is, and that'll continue in 2023. The past year has been a great one in many respects, with booming production and robust profits, but the obstructionist Biden administration, rampaging global demand, a weak investment scenario, shortages of workers, supply chain constraints, seismic issues, and overburdened refineries loom large as 2022 winds down. However, State Railroad Commissioners Wayne Christian and Jim Wright and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owner President Ed Longenecker are confident the industry will prevail. Prior to the pandemic of 2019, Texas produced a record 1.8 billion barrels of oil and 10.1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, making up over 40% of the nation's entire production, Christian said from Austin. Then, before the industry could recover, Joe Biden was elected president and he created roadblocks that added unnecessary regulatory uncertainty, discouraged growth and additional production. Under Biden, oil and gas have been under constant attack from shifting financial investments, increasing regulations, and an economy of fire with inflation and supply chain issues. We've seen an overall energy inflation rate of 18% that everyday Americans still struggle with headed into the holiday season. But Christian was heartened to see his Republican Party regain control of the U.S. House of Representatives in Washington, putting up a firewall against Biden's radical keep-it-in-the-ground agenda. I look forward to their proposals aiming to restore Texas to its previous production levels, he said. We've been blessed with an abundance of oil and gas that pays billions in taxes and royalties, which is why the Texas legislature will have a $27 billion surplus to work with and hopefully provide relief to taxpayers instead of tax increases like other states. Longenecker said 22 was the year when the world gained a new appreciation for having a reliable, secure supply of energy, and Texas rose to the challenge to keep prices affordable at home and help allies abroad. 74% of all U.S. exports went to Europe in the first half of 2022, and ports along Texas's coast like Corpus Christi provided essential infrastructure to meet European demands, Longenecker said. In the first half of 22, 90.1 million tops of liquefied natural gas moved through Corpus. Higher commodity prices led to record oil and gas production in Texas. Oil output in the Permian Basin alone is set to hit a record of 5.5 million barrels per day in December. This speaks directly to the ingenuity and grit of Texas producers as the industry faced a multitude of challenges this year, including workforce shortages, capital constraints, supply chain issues, inflationary pressures, and an adversarial federal regulatory environment. Longenecker said the U.S. sorely needs more refineries, having processed 19 million barrels of oil per day in 2020, but only 17.9 million PBD this year, as some old refineries were shut down for repairs and others dismantled. President Biden's record releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve endanger American security, and they are a short-sighted fix for energy prices, he said from Austin. The SPR reached its lowest level since the 1980s in October after over 100 million barrels were released. To truly address energy prices, the world needs a reliable, ongoing increase in its energy supply. But for 2023, we face a serious challenge. Global demand will continue to outpace supply. In order to address record demand and increase production, we need investment in infrastructure and thoughtful, collaborative, energy-friendly policies. With the right policies in place, Texas can continue to make a meaningful contribution to our global energy shortage. Unfortunately, the Biden administration continues to finger-point and pursue policies that put further pressure on supply and drive prices higher, adding to recessionary concerns and the cost of goods and services for Americans. Wright said 22 was a great year for the Texas oil and gas industry overall, with increased production, a record $11 billion in production tax revenues paid to the state so far, and a continued decline in our percentage of flaring. I am particularly proud of how the industry fared in the face of so many challenges from new weatherization efforts passed as a result of Winter Storm Uri and a federal administration that continues to implement draconian rules and regulations with the seeming intent to end domestic oil and gas production, Wright said. He also cited pressures of responding to increased global demand for Texas-produced natural resources as a result of the war in Ukraine. Our natural resources will continue to be a driving force for our economy, and our importance on the world stage will only increase, Wright said. But if there is one thing I know about this industry, it is that the issues and challenges we face may change, but they will never go away. The Texas oil and gas industry has always proved itself resilient and adaptable, but our challenges include first and foremost the federal government's continued efforts to attack domestic oil and gas production, particularly in the Permian Basin. Other challenges at the top of my mind include more effectively curtailing seismic events, earthquakes, and finding alternatives to the injection of produced water. Wright said additional obstacles are workforce shortages and supply chain issues. So I think resiliency and adaptability will be more important than ever, he said. The investment dynamic has dramatically changed over the last few years as investors approach this upswing with more discipline. So what extent that's a response to the increased focus on environmental, social, and governance issues, I cannot say. But it is a marked change from the drill now, figure the rest out later mentality that has been prevalent in the past. Junior League hosting Christmas carriage rides. The Junior League of Odessa will be hosting its fifth annual Christmas carriage rides beginning December 7th. The Christmas carriage rides will take place December 7th to December 10th and December 12th to December 14th. Rides will start every 20 minutes from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. and will run through the Emerald Forest subdivision. There will be parking available in alleyway southwest of Shiloh Road and Stony Ridge Road. The fifth annual carriage rides is a fundraiser for the Junior League of Odessa to support the mission of raising funds and providing volunteers for the West Texas community as well as providing leadership development opportunities for Junior League members. The event consists of a horse-drawn carriage ride through the beautifully decorated and brightly lit Emerald Forest Subdivision. Carriages are available in three sizes, 4-person, 6-person, and 12-person. Children 3 years and younger are free but must remain seated on an adult's lap throughout the ride. Sweet Traveler Patisserie will be on site selling hot chocolate and other confections for ride-goers. Reservations for carriage rides are available at tinyurl.com/5n6u3kv3. The cost for a 4-person carriage ride is $150, while a 6-person carriage ride is $200, and a 12-person carriage ride is $375. Christmas carriage rides sponsors include Odessa Marriott, Basin Orthopedic Surgical Specialists, First Physicians, Jason Yelly State Farm Insurance, Medical Center Health System, the Michael Ashton Family, Bulldog Safety Anchors, Elite Supply Partners, Southwest Heritage Credit Union, Hawkins Construction, and Warren Catt. Quick Hits Help the Needy. Struggling families across Odessa need your donation to the Empty Stocking Fund to put a good holiday meal on the table and toys under the tree. Lydia Great Grandma raised 2 granddaughters. Their mother is incarcerated. The 20th year of the Empty Stocking Fund opened last week with a goal of $100,000, and it won't be met without your help. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families like that of Lydia, not her real name, a great-grandmother raising 2 great-granddaughters. Lydia barely makes ends meet with the mother of the girls in prison. This family can be helped through the Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Empty stocking funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree for needy seniors and children. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip code for both is 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Donate online at https://giveSalvationArmyTexas.org/campaign/empty-stocking-fund-2022-Odessa-Texas/C43-6247. Free blood pressure and glucose screenings. The Medical Center, Hospital Family Health Clinic West University, 6030 West University Boulevard, has scheduled a free blood pressure and glucose screenings from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. each Tuesday through December 27th. Visit tinyurl.com/2YVKV55C. Neighborhood Watch Meeting. The Odessa Police Department will present a Neighborhood Watch Meeting at 7 p.m. Tuesday on the OPD Classroom, 205 North Grant Avenue. This month's topic is Impaired Driving Prevention. There will be a presentation from MCH featuring 2 mothers sharing their stories, an MCAC presentation on alcohol and drug abuse prevention and intervention, and an OPD presentation on traffic safety. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/BDHJSVKE. What's happening? Adopt a Star donation drive back for the 10th year. For the 10th year, First Basin Credit Union announced on Monday that it is hosting our Adopt a Star donation drive to benefit High Sky Children's Ranch. All monies raised and donated by FBCU will be presented to High Sky to purchase Christmas gifts for children of all ages up to 17 years old. Gifts purchased range from necessities such as blankets, winter coats, clothing and shoes, to fun wish list items such as dolls, toy cars, and bicycles. The donation drive will run from Monday through December 20th, and donations can be made at any FBCU location. To donate, simply visit a branch, grab a $5 to $100 star from our tree, take it to a teller, and make a children's Christmas special. Locations for FBCU include Midland, 3316 North Midland Drive, Odessa, 2740 County Road West, 4217 Grandview Avenue, 713 Golder Avenue, 7100 East Texas Highway 191, Andrews, 1205 Northeast 1st Street, Lubbock, 3805 19th Street. MC Sets Holiday Event. Midland College will host its annual holiday evening December 1st at the McCormick Gallery at the Allison Fine Arts Building, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland. Free visits from Santa will be from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. MC staff will take pictures with Santa and have them available for download by December 6th. Frito pie available for $7 a bowl from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., a fundraiser to benefit Midland College Alumni Scholarship. A free student art show and reception is from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Shap Singers and Jazz Ensemble Concert is at 7:30 p.m., and it is free. The art hallway will be available from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Items created by MC Art students will be featured. Easy ISD Appreciation Set. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce will host an Ector County ISD Appreciation from noon to 5 p.m. December 16th at Barn B on the Ector County Coliseum grounds. The event will provide a free lunch and t-shirt to every EC ISD employee, all 4,200 of them. Volunteers are needed for all shifts, and sponsorships are available. Contact Carla Hartwig at carlah@odessachamber.com. OC Holiday Happening. The annual Odessa College Holiday Happening starts at 5 p.m. today, November 29th, in the area just east of the Learning Resource Center and Wilkerson Hall on the OC campus. Santa will arrive on a fire engine and help us light the Christmas tree to start the celebration. For everyone's enjoyment, the event will also feature an artificial ice skating rink, free hot chocolate and cookies, face painting, a cakewalk, cookie decorating, a pop-up library, free refreshments, and a food truck. A free meal voucher for the food truck will be given to the first 50 families at the event. The public is invited, and the event is free. Bronco Legacy prepares for Christmas show. Bronco Legacy will present Bring Me Love for their Christmas show, set for 7:30 p.m. December 9th and 10th. Tickets for the pop ensemble are $10 for adults and $5 for children or students. They are available at ohschoir.luds.com. The show's name, Bring Me Love, comes from the title of the opening number. Head choir director Ginger Story said 25 to 30 people are usually involved in the show in some form, theater students, theater teacher, and others. They have 15 vocalists, a stage manager, and a sound technician, and 5 instrumentalists. They include Karen I. Channer on piano, Jacob Garcia on keyboards, Johnny Salvador on guitar, bass is Caleb Williams, and drums is Isaiah Cisneros. He is an OHS student who plays center snare for the band. The show is mostly tradition except for Bring Me Love, but we're doing kind of a mashup of What Child Is This and Ave Maria. It's fantastic. It's beautiful. When I say mashup, that tends to make you think of bright, happy, and fast, but it's not. It's very slow, a beautiful ballad, Story said. They are also doing a song for The Nightmare Before Christmas. This Is Christmas is what it's called, she added. They also will perform Christmas Alleluia. Those are the four big group members. The rest of it will be solos. Most of them are pretty traditional tunes, maybe sung by a more recent artist. Story said, it's a little bit more straightforward than our spring show. Our spring show has a lot more theme-oriented things. Work started on the show in October, but it involves a range of students from various grades. We graduated quite a few seniors, especially senior boys, last year, so a lot of our boys are younger. We have two seniors in that group of boys, and then in the girls, I've got quite a few seniors, but then we also have a couple of sophomores and juniors. No freshmen, it's just 10th through 12th grade, Story said. Students have to be in the choir program for at least a year before they audition for Bronco Legacy. We have moved a freshman in the middle of the year because we needed someone because of an eligibility issue. But on a general rule, we don't put freshmen in the group. We also don't, as a general rule, have freshmen in our varsity choir, but this year, because of a scheduling issue with the men's choir, it being at the same time as football, we had to make a few allowances, Story said. She added that this group of students is pretty great. We like them, we'll keep them, Story said. She added that she is looking forward to the show. It's always a lot of fun to put together. It's a lot of work, and I'm tired, but it is also a lot of fun, and it's rewarding to see the kids come together. This is kind of like their way of figuring out how to work together as a team and see what it is going to take because their spring show requires so much more of them. This is kind of like their practice to get ready for the big show at the end of the year, Story said. For the spring show, they are considering calling it Sing 23, like the animated Sing 2 movie. They also focus on the spring show in January. We're calling it Sing 23 and doing some not necessarily music from that show, but some inspired by the show, and having a set that would be reminiscent of that. But that's kind of where we are, Story said. For Caitlin Fitzgerald, an 18-year-old senior who also is president of the choir, and Azari Byford, 18, who is secretary for the choir, this will be their last Christmas show. Fitzgerald is in her fourth year in choir. I think it's going to be very different than anybody has seen before, and I think it's the most exciting Christmas show that we've put on, Fitzgerald said. We have very different songs that we're doing this year, and it's a very fun group that we have this year, she added. Both Fitzgerald and Byford said the show is bittersweet because they are seniors. I'm glad it's going to be such a good show, but I'm sad it's my last one, Fitzgerald said. Byford has been in choir since middle school. I'm actually really excited for it, he said of the show. I feel like we have a lot of stuff that we can bring. I feel like the energy is going to be high. He thinks he is going to miss being part of the choir. I think we have to enjoy every moment that we get and the bonds that we've created. We're going to have to just enjoy being together, completing or finishing this Christmas show and finishing all the stuff we have ahead, Byford said. Fitzgerald and Byford said they have both enjoyed the choir's community feeling. We all get along really well, and it's a good way to get to know people, Fitzgerald said. I like the interaction that you get. You get to see people laugh. You can see them on the good days. You can see them on the bad days. Lord knows I have those. You feel a family vibe, Byford said. They both urged people to come out and see the show on December 9th and 10th at the OHS Performing Arts Center. Bring your friends, Fitzgerald said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.